Yes, thank you. I would like to really thank organizers because I enjoy here all the things. I enjoy talks very much and I enjoy food very much. And even I enjoy weather. You probably don't believe me, but it's because it reminds me of my hometown, Moscow. So I'm going to talk about supergroups, and I'm going to have write down the plan, and quite not like I do it usually. I'm really going to define what is a supergroup first. So let me write down the plan of the talk, tentative plan. So general talk about supergroups. Then I will talk about Borel-Weil-Bohr theorem for supergroups, what is known, etc. And then I explain why, how it is related to BGG reciprocity. But before that, I'm also going to formulate another analogous theorem, which is completely similar to Borel-Weil-Bohr theorem, but which doesn't require geometry, which is Kostin theorem. And then I will talk about BGG reciprocity. Then I'm going to do concrete calculations. So it's going to be the combinatorics for classical supergroups. And relation with the categorification of GL infinity. And that would be it. So we're talking about, we start with very general object, which is a fine algebraic supergroup, but we even don't need this assumption from the beginning, but I rather say that K is algebraically closed of characteristic zero. So if, I hope everybody already knows that super doesn't mean anything except that you work now in Z2 graded category and on a fine algebraic supergroup, one can think about it as really a Hopf algebra. Super algebra. A super commutative. Hopf algebra. Let us call it R. So it has zero and one part, even and odd part. The conditional condition that you want, that if you take an ideal generated by R1, it's automatically a Hopf ideal, and what you want, that if your quotient, the result must be the Hopf algebra of some affine algebraic group. So we can think about R as really space of functions on a supergroup G, and if you think about G as an object, as a group itself, you need a functor of points, so you can take for any supercommutative ring, or rather algebra over K, you can construct S point as a homomorphism from R to S. So here I'm going to give two examples which are called the classical supergroups. And my concrete results would be only about these two examples. The first example is GLMN, which you can think about as a group of matrices the block matrices really with entries xij, and the elements which send them here have even grading, and which we stand here is have odd grading. So I put it just like this. Okay. And now the classical this classical series orthogonal and symplectic become one in the super case, because if you think about non-degenerate form on a superspace, I forgot to mention, there is one, of course, there is condition if you think about this in a block form. You have the condition where the determinants of both cases are not zero. So you have to localize a super polynomial ring by the determinants of A and B. So now the orthogonal symplectic comes to one series here, obviously, because if you think about non-degenerate symmetric form on a superspace, it's symmetric and on even part and skew symmetric on odd part. So here I probably should write also what is J0. Just product of two classical groups. And this is my first example. So this is going to be a subgroup here. With matrices. So I define them really as a functor of points, but you can easily look at them as Hof super algebras. So here, super transposed is this matrix, this algebra, which is basically the matrix of the corresponding non-degenerate form on a superspace of dimension M2n. So in this second case, J0 is the product of orthogonal, rather SO, orthogonal, okay, you can do O and SO version, let's do SO. So orthogonal and symplectic group. So there are some other examples, interesting examples, but today all concrete results will be about this. Although general results will be rather general. Before I go any further, I probably should mention another thing about super groups, which was first noticed by Kasulik and Constant, really, that you can think about, so if you look at the corresponding super algebra, which can be naturally defined. So the question is how you can go back and forth. And you can think actually about the superalgebra G itself. And you know that said it, this symmetric path, which was people were talking today, only it's now in the category of super. And you can think about really, suppose you already have the algebraic group whose Lie algebra is G0, and so we are working in the category of algebraic group, and suppose in addition you have really representation of G0 on the whole superalgebra G, which is compatible, which is the adjoint representation when restricted on G0, then you can recover the supergroup really. Okay, so there is really an equivalence of categories G the node pair, or Harishchandra pair, super Harishchandra pairs, is equivalent to the category algebraics of your groups. Similarly, if you talk about representations, about modules, that you have the similar equivalence of categories, if you just think about G, G naught modules, and this is equivalent to the category of representation of algebraic. Okay. So this is probably all that I wanted to say in general about algebraic supergroups. Now I'm going to move to the supergroups, which really we have an additional assumption now that this underlying group is reductive. Oh no, maybe I should mention one thing. Before I go, I explained here that there is a function. So I really would like now to explain what is the algebra of functions on G as a module over G naught. Over Lie super algebra. And what I'm saying is that we just have this co-induced operation here. We take a regular representation of the group G naught and the dual co-induction in the category of Lie superalgebras. And the one remarkable thing which is related to this induction, which is really an extension of finite degree, which never happens in the usual case, but exactly like the talk yesterday, the symmetric algebra of poorly odd space is exterior algebra, so it's finite dimensional. So as a vector space, you can think about it just exterior algebra of G1, tensor chaos. Wait, dual, thanks. Okay? So now we'll do an additional assumption that G0 is reductive. As in our examples there. And we want to compare two categories, G modules and G naught modules, as well as the categories of finite dimensional modules in both cases, which I call F naught and F. So those are just finite dimensional modules. Then the first new thing is, well, G naught is reductive, and we know that the category F, or even the category G naught mod, is a semi-simple category. The category of a superalgebra will be not semi-simple anymore. But we have two natural functors, really, from G naught module to G modules, as well as from F naught to F, which are induction and co-induction. This is induction and the co-induction. And so the main point here is that if you start with a finite dimensional module, you end up with a finite dimensional module again. And the trivial thing is that the image of this is going to be projective if G0 was reductive, because the induction function moves projective to projective modules. And here we have injective to injective. Well, because it's really finite dimensional extension, you also have certain quite simple property that the co-induced module of M0 is actually isomorphic to induced module. Twisted with some one-dimensional module here, T. And in case if G0 is reductive, you really can take T outside. So therefore, even if we want to study such a category F, in the generality, we will see that we have enough, first of all, we have enough injective and projective modules. So every simple module has cover and a hull, injective hull. And moreover, every injective is projective, and vice versa. They might be projective hull and injective cover on different simple modules, because in principle, this twist by one-dimensional representation is not always trivial, but that doesn't matter really much. So the last thing which I would like to tell you in general is the source of algebraic version of Peter Weyl theorem for supergroups. And it's really very simple after what I already said. If you look at the regular functions on the supergroup, look at it as G module, and you have this decomposition. This is, of course, injective and projective, and we do have the such sum where L runs all simple modules in F. P is L is projective cover. This is just the dimension of an even part of L. L is always a degraded object. So the multiplicity of each projective module equals the dimension of L0. And you can a little bit switch it and put dimension L here if you remember that as soon as you work in the category of the two graded module, you have this switch of parity functor. You can always switch. So this L0 is coming from this. Okay, so...
You cannot do it for pi modules. You can do it for
Right. It's a very good question here, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. It's pretty unclear what has happened, because really, you know, that this left and right action of G, as in the usual case, that's what you're talking about, right? And it is interesting, for GLMN, there is a work, Zubkov and somebody else, I don't remember who, they really studied the structure of bimodule. In general, it's not clear how to do it. But maybe some things I'm going to tell today are related to your question, really. So now I'm going to impose some additional assumptions on my G, which are really technical. That's not what I cannot do the same results, but they require a little bit more work, and just want to skip them, so I assume the following thing. So that first of all, of course, G-naught is reductive. If I look at the Cartan subalgebra of G-naught, I want two things. I want G1H be trivial. So nothing odd centralizes the Cartan subalgebra. This is the first assumption. And the second assumption, I want that G is isomorphic to G star as a module over G naught. Okay? So, and then I have root decomposition. I always have the root decomposition, but in this situation, for example, the parity of roots are well defined and some other stuff. So I have root decomposition with respect to action of H, as in the usual case. And I also can construct a triangular decomposition. And I can construct the Borel B, being H plus and plus. And I can also lift it to a supergroup B. And for the purposes which I need later on, I would like to say that, as in the usual case, B is a product, semi-direct product of the torus and some unipotent supergroup. Okay, so one remark, which I'm not going to explain a lot today, but which is really quite important for this business, to the contrary to the usual case, not all Borels are conjugates. So there are several classes of conjugate Borels. I just write it down. Finitely many, yes, finitely many. They are very interesting. I just don't have time to talk about them. And so, if you could think about a super variety, and actually you don't even bother so much why the super variety exists, because you can do it in some other way, but if you accept that it exists, so that means that actually you have several non-isomorphic plug super varieties, G-mod B. Okay? Then, of course, it's not very difficult to produce the highest weight theory in this case. So remember that I really work in the category of modules over the group, so my ingredient is also a weight lattice, which I fix, which comes from the weight lattice of G-naught, really. So I'm going to denote these lattices by lambda. And I can define an irreducible representation with highest weight lambda as soon as I fix the triangular decomposition. But in order this to be in the category F of finite dimensional module, I have some special condition on the weight, which is a dominance condition. Okay. There is also a couple of other things which I need. First of all, there is a wild group W, which is a wild group of an even part. And there is a vector rho, which already everybody knows what it is, so you can have the same guy in super case. Sum of even positive, half sum of even positive roots minus half sum of odd positive roots. Okay? And an important in this all business is the action of the W on the lattice, which is shifted by rho. As in the usual case, it's quite important here. So for example, you can construct a certain cone inside lambda. Lambda, maybe. So this is a certain positivity condition with even roots, positive roots, even. This is a very natural condition, and one can see immediately that this is a fundamental domain of the group action. As in the usual case, super rho. And one thing which I want to mention also, I don't want to talk much about it, but as in the previous talk by Roger Zero, when you look at the killing form in super case, one of the main things which happening, it's not positive definite anymore. So in principle, these guys can positive or negative norm, and some odd roots are isotropic, and then they actually make the difficulty of the problem. So. But the main point here, main and interesting point, is that lambda plus doesn't give you dominance condition in general. So we have an embedding like this. Lambda plus is inside lambda dominant, but it doesn't coincide. And only for G element, there is a special choice of the Borel when they do coincide. Actually, not exactly true also for OSP 2 to N. There is one special choice of Borel when these conditions coincide. Yeah? Lambda dominant is bigger. There are more dominant weights. This is because rho is a strange guy, and it can have negative values in here, okay? Because it's by rho, that's what confuses you. Also, it should be strictly greater. So this special choice of Borel, maybe I should explain a little bit about it. It amounts to the following thing, but you really can choose a parabolic Значит, this reductive part is G naught. So actually, and you can do it only in some very special cases, not in general. Well, then the next thing which we are going to define is the Borel Weierbohr theorem. Actually, Borel, the geometric induction in this case. So we are going to define the following functor. So basically from B modules to G modules, which is the following is soon. Okay, it has several definitions, but basically this is a derived function of sections. So if you have a B module and what you can do, you can make a vector bundle, and then you can take the cohomology. And just to avoid going to the opposite Borel, I define the functor in the following way. So let's call this line bundle, say, O of M. You can use another definition which you completely ignore, the definition using the line bundle, and you can just think about functor of sections and a derived functor to sections. So what the standard Borel-Weierbohr theorem tells us, suppose now that G is just the usual reductive group. So by C lambda, I always denote a one-dimensional B module with weight lambda. When I pick up any lambda in lambda, and for a moment I assume that G equals G naught, and then we have this. So basically what it says here is that cohomology appears only in one place, and to figure this place you should move using the shifted wire group action lambda to the positive chambers, and then you get an irreducible representation. And what happens in super case for classical or simple supergroups was actually first started by Ivan Penkov. And he proved that if lambda satisfy certain generality condition, the same is true. It's an old theorem from the '80s. So lambda is typical means lambda satisfy certain generality condition, then the above statement is true. For for supergroups, say at least simple classical supergroups. That's what was proven. Okay, but otherwise it becomes quite interesting, because in reality you can have cohomology at certain degrees, in several degrees. Suppose lambda is dominant but not positive, not in the positive chamber, then you can have cohomology in many degrees, and not only in this case. And the question is what to do with them, and is it possible to calculate? And yes, particularly in some places possible to calculate, but the most important thing that I think they really play important role in representation theory and study this category F. So the next step, I'm going to define something. So let me introduce the Grothendieck group of F. And let me introduce the following virtual model, an element in the Grothendieck thing. Basically, this is the class in the Grothendieck ring of the earlier characteristic of the line band along the mod B. This, I mean, Jordan-Helder multiplicities here. And then I write down the class of Ohmian in the Grothendieck ring. So, generally speaking, it's a virtual module, and what is good about it, that you can write down its character. And it can be written by the Weyl formula. Slight super modification, of course. Okay, so those are the famous Weyl denominators. Let me write them down. I take this certain expression with even roots, positive root, and similar expression with odd roots, and odd roots go up. Otherwise, it's just the same. Okay. No, there are several proofs of it. Actually, I think Ivan was the first when he proved this theorem. You can think one proof is geometric. It's the most easiest to explain. If you look at the module over G mod B, it has the filtration by line bundles on the usual flag manifold. And you can write down terms of this filtration. And you can't write down and use the usual Borel-Weil-Borch, but for the because the Euler characteristic of graded is the same as a filter. So this is the best way to explain it, the sweetest way. So in particular, one thing that you notice immediately, that E of, if you look at this formula, just look at this formula. Certain anti-symmetry for this Euler characteristic with respect to the action of the Weyl group. And the second important thing you can say is that if you are on the wall, it's zero. That doesn't mean the cohomology is zero, and they don't. But the Euler characteristic as a virtual module is zero. Okay? And now I'm going to formulate one of the results of today's talk. So presently, just recently proved it. I never realized that there is a simple proof of this fact. This is my based on my joint work with Corelli and Crozon. Let me a little bit introduce notation. I already have L of lambda irreducible. By P of lambda, I mean the projective cover of this guy. And by E of lambda, I already introduced E of lambda. So basically, I would like to relate these three guys. But there is a slight difference of parameters here. Here and here, I have this dominance condition. But here, in general, I have like a little bit less weight because they really must be positive. Mu is an element of lambda plus. So it's not exactly dominant weight. It's something else. It's a little bit, it's a really guy in the Weyl chamber. So, okay. Have to write down the theorem really over there. If I write down mu as a linear combination of the classes of simple modules, it is also the claim that I can write T lambda, the class of T lambda in the Grothendieck group, as a finite linear combination of this Euler characteristic guys, and guess what? A lambda mu equals B mu lambda. So in a sense, this is looks not exactly like Bernstein-Gelfand reciprocity, but it is very close to it if you think about E of mu, a virtual module, as an analog of standard module or analog of Fermat module. So this is a statement. So in particular, you have three abelian groups here. The Grothendieck ring of F. And inside it, you have the ring generated by emu with virtual characters. I call it K of E, and inside it, you have the ring, which is generated by projective modules. And those are proper inclusions, really. So you can see that they are not coincide. They don't coincide. The guy here, yes, exactly. Thanks. Right. So the reason for this is, of course, that if you, say, take a projective resolution of a simple module, it's infinite. And this is not surprising because when you calculate cohomology of Lie super algebras, you can go infinitely again because C symmetric is exterior, symmetric power is exterior power, and vice versa. And so I just want to say one quick thing, that really this is a very simple theorem if you have a right approach to it. And the right approach is actually to reformulate, to find out these multiplicities, B mu lambda, in terms of the cohomology of certain Lie superalgebra. And this is what I call a constant theorem. Maybe I should say super constant. Yeah. I like super constant there because I think constant is Superman, certainly, at least in two senses. Okay, so if I would like to calculate this in here, I would like to calculate the multiplicity of a simple module in this the piece of derived functor. It's given by the ith cohomology of m plus of, instead of L mu, I should take the T mu projective guy here, twisted by C minus lambda, and take H invariance here. It's clear that the cohomology have the natural action of the torus, and you pick up cohomology of certain weights. And if you remember the constant theorem in the usual case, then you see that the only difference that you have here, L mu, but it's just because P mu and L mu are the same. And now, if you look carefully on the character formula for these virtual modules, and you look at this wild denominator, you will see that in disguise, its inverse is actually the generating function to calculate in this cohomology. So you see it right away. So now, if we are in this good case of GLMS, this result was known for a very long time. It was probably first proven by Zoom. Because in this case, for a suitable choice of Borel, E lambda has only one term, so its one cohomology vanish everywhere else. And this non-zero one, and let's say that lambda is actually a positive, just for simplicity. One can prove that this is a certain induced module, finite dimensional, which usually has the name of the Katz module, K. Lambda. Which can be obtained by induction from a certain parabolic, the parabolic which I already mentioned before, the parabolic containing B of reductive part G naught from the irreducible module of over G naught. Okay, so this guy here plays the role of Fermat module, and the category is a highest weight category. There is this general notion, and in this case it is, and the BJJ reciprocity becomes the real BJJ reciprocity. And now I would like, so this is the end of the general part, and now I would like to say, okay, this is all very good, but how to calculate this A lambda mu of B mu lambda, and there is a really interesting combinatorics involved here. And I do think that I have like about 10 minutes. Okay. So I try really to be brief because everybody is tired. But I would like to talk about this categorification, of course. So for GLMM, in 96, I really calculated these coefficients A lambda mu, but they were sort of an alternative sum. So in spirit of Allen Knudsen, that was not a positive answer. And so I never get a positive answer, but Jonathan Brandon got a positive numbers here, really positive answer. And it's extremely simple answer, really, when you realize, although they realized it quite late, that this is extremely simple answer. And one of advantages, but if you, instead of A lambda mu, which sounds crazy, but it's really what's happening, if instead of A lambda mu, you calculate B mu lambda, which are the same, the answer is much, much easier. So first I would like to talk about how John Brandon did it, and what we recently did with Caroline Grouzon, we realized that the similar construction can be done for orthosymplectic case, but I don't think I really have time. It's not much more difficult than orthosymplectic case. The only real difficulty is that the coefficients A lambda mu might be negative sometimes. But they, if they are negative, they are just plus or minus one. So here is the Brandon idea. For GLMM, so first of all, there are certain things that you can do. You take GL infinity, and somehow you would like to consider matrices parameterized by all integers. So the basis Eij, where I and j R and V. And you consider a certain very special representation of GL infinity. So V is a standard representation, and V low star is exactly this representation which Ivan explained in the first talk. It's just the restricted dual representation. And you consider now this as a module over Z. So you choose a very special basis, which is just a monomial basis. Okay? So here you have the basis EI, I and Z. And here you have a dual basis FJ, J and Z. And now you pick up lambda in lambda plus, and you associate to this weight lambda, which in this particular case is really the pair of partitions. So this lambda, you can think about it as I do it by written by rho, but then you have this combinatorics, integers in decreasing order. And you take this ring here, K of E. This is the medium ring. And you map it in this representation over there. Let's call it somehow VMM. So basically, what you say, you move E of lambda to the following vector, E A1, etc. sorry, FA1, which FA2, which FAM, AM, which E, C1, which E, BM. A very simple thing. So this guy here, you associate this is the most natural monomial basis in the representation. Now here, you actually have the action of so-called translation functors. Which amounts of tensorine, okay, this is GLMN, remember, it also has its standard representation and its natural and co-natural representation, that amounts to tensorine of E and the tensorine of E star, but it also involves a projection on blocks, which unfortunately I don't have time to explain, but philosophically you can associate to each block here a weight here. Because block here goes to the weight of representation. So under this map, if you look carefully on it, you realize the translation functors, tensorine of E and tensorine of E star as the standard shear generators. So EI, tensorine of E goes basically with EI, and tensorine of E star goes basically with FI and EIFI, because we can also think about gel infinity, the Kasmudi algebra with infinite Zinkin diagram, and you realize you basically what you do, your categories. You do the categorification of this representation in the category of GLMN modules. And what happens with the projective modules and how they are related? So he managed to prove that the projective module corresponds to canonical basis in this representation. And what is interesting is that for other classical group, you have a very similar picture. But I was hoping that we get categorification of our series B and D, but no, what we really get is really the same algebra, only you choose a different barrel, which is just one-sided barrel, and for orthogonal supergroup, you get the categorification of just this algebra, and I should stop immediately. Thank you.